growth, we would measure it by indicators of well-being, health, happiness, equity, and the thriving of our environment. It means restructuring the economy to secure the accountability of its institutions to the people and earth that these institutions are intended to serve. Break up monopolies and root the ownership of the pieces under the control of the people they are intended to serve. The goal is an economy that serves life rather than exploiting and destroying it.
You're listening to David Corton on the future of humanity. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program and for David Corton's book, Agenda for a New Economy, call us 1-800-444-1977 or online, our website, alternativeradio.org.
A life-centered society requires tackling inequality head on. As research has shown, more unequal societies tend to have worse outcomes in nearly every aspect of human well-being, from health to social cohesion. Beyond a certain point, more wealth for the wealthy adds nothing to societal health and happiness. Rather, it erodes the social fabric. Policies that promote fair distribution of resources, progressive taxation, living wages, universal access to health care and education, and that limits extreme wealth. These become essential. The aim is not total equality, but to ensure everyone has enough and that wealth serves the community, not just itself. Crucially, a life-centered way of living elevates the importance of community and relationships. Instead of the hyper-individualism of the old story, we recognize that our freedom and thriving are relational. We best fulfill ourselves through building caring relationships with family, friends, neighbors, and nature, far more than accumulating things. Studies confirm what our hearts know. People who focus their lives on money and consumption suffer higher rates of anxiety and depression, whereas those who find meaning in relationships and service report greater happiness. We experience the fullness of life through the caring bonds of loved ones and community, through the positive rush of helping a neighbor, and through our care for nature. We flourish when we are connected, when we belong to a community that cares for us and have work that allows us to contribute our own gifts in return. One can imagine how different such a society would feel and look compared to what we now experience. Let us take a moment to visualize it. Painting a picture of the possible future helps to make it real. Imagine you could travel a few decades into the future, to a time when these principles have taken root. You might find yourself in a world of vibrant human-scale communities. Perhaps you visit a town where people live in compact green neighborhoods. Homes are modest but comfortable, designed for energy efficiency and powered by the sun and wind. Most residents get around by walking or cycling as their daily needs are met for work, shops, schools, all close by. Cars exist, but far fewer than today, and they are quiet. Clean electric vehicles used mainly for providing public transport for essential trips. The air is clean, and children can safely play in the streets. In this future community, much of what people need is produced locally or regionally. Small farms growing a diversity of crops around the town, and local farmers sell fresh food at a market hall. Local businesses, a bakery, a repair shop, a solar panel workshop, all thrive and provide good livelihoods. The economy is no longer about endless consumption, but about sustainable prosperity, meeting everyone's basic needs and well-being within Earth's limits. Meaningful work is abundant. People are employed in restoring ecosystems, farming in regenerative ways, teaching and caring for others, creating art and culture. These kinds of jobs, which build community and heal the earth, are valued and fairly paid. Importantly, gross disparities of wealth have disappeared. There are no billionaires living in mansions while others struggle in slums. While people still have different talents and earnings, the gap between rich and poor is small, and everyone has access to the essentials of a dignified life. This creates a palpable sense of social cohesion, a feeling that we're all in this together. Decisions are made as locally as possible. Town meetings and councils are common, giving people a direct say in shaping their community's future. Democracy is a living reality, not a distant ideal. As you travel through this world, you see nature thriving alongside human communities. There are parks, community gardens, and tree-lined streets within the town. Beyond the town are green belts of forest and meadow. You notice that the endless sprawl of suburban strip malls and tract housing is nowhere in sight. An elder explains that as the price of oil rose and climate disruptions worsened, people abandoned those unsustainable patterns of the early 21st century. They realized it made no sense to pave over fertile land and drive hours a day in polluting cars. Instead, communities grew more compact and self-sufficient, preserving open land for nature and agriculture. Rivers run clean, wildlife has corridors to roam, and people have space to enjoy the beauty of the natural world. The atmosphere of daily life feels different in this future, more relaxed and connected. There's a sense of peace and contentment that comes from living in harmony with neighbors and nature. This world resonates with what we know in our hearts to be right. It looks far more like what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called the beloved community, a society of justice, equal opportunity, and brotherhood. A sharp contrast with the dystopias of competition and greed we left behind. This vision of an ecological civilization is not an unattainable utopia. Elements of this world are already being built and lived in many places today, in eco-villages, green cities, and indigenous-led conservation projects. The seeds of the future are all around us, waiting to be nurtured. It is inspiring to note such a future. But our task now is to turn inspiration into action. How do we navigate from the world we have to the ecological civilization we want? The scale of the change needed can feel overwhelming. But history shows that systems can quickly change when enough people align their actions with a new story and push together for transformation. We are fortunate to have guidance from visionary leaders who walked this path before us. People who kept their moral compass even amid darkness. Recall Nelson Mandela and his comrades, who chose reconciliation over revenge. Their insight is crucial. The enemy is the system, not individual people. It means that as we work to change unjust systems, whether economic exploitation or racial domination, we should do so with a spirit of love and inclusion, not hate. We certainly must hold individuals accountable when they abuse power, but our goal is a healed society in which even former adversaries can find a place. This perspective helps us avoid the trap of dehumanization. As Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. taught, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. The means must align with the ends. A just and compassionate world can only be built by just and compassionate means. King, Gandhi, Mandela all understood that the change we seek goes beyond policy adjustments. It requires a revolution of values. Dr. King spoke of racism, materialism, and militarism as interlocking evils, and he called for a radical revolution of values. To shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society, from a money-centered culture to a life-centered culture. King's vision of the beloved community aligns with the ecological and spiritual worldview we have been discussing. It is a society where love and justice reign, where conflicts are resolved peacefully, and where everyone is cared for. The beloved community of an ecological civilization is not a distant ideal, but a real responsibility, if we dedicate ourselves to this great work of transformation. Part of that work is to challenge the stories that guide us. This involves education, media, the arts, and conversations at every level of society. We must challenge the old myths that equate wealth with virtue or paint humans as inherently selfish and competitive. We can replace them with narratives of interconnection, cooperation, and shared well-being that are closer to the truth of our human nature. Modern psychology and anthropology tell us that humans are a highly social, empathic species. We thrive through cooperation and mutual aid, not just competition. Our self-betrayal as purely selfish is distortion that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We need to undo that conditioning, to break free of our cultural trance by embracing the living stories of empathy, solidarity, and ecological kinship that define our true, mature human nature. Another part of the work is to enact bold policies and institutional reforms that put our new values into practice. Certain directions are clear. We know, for example, that we must redirect resources and incentives, shifting subsidies and investments away from destructive industries, fossil fuels, deforestation, unsustainable agriculture, financial speculation, and the creation of artificial financial assets, and toward regenerative industries, renewable energy, ecosystem restoration, and sustainable farming. We know that our financial systems should serve people and planet. Financial speculation and the private creation of derivatives, cryptocurrencies, and other artificial financial assets enrich a few at the expense of the many. They need to be curbed. Banking institutions should prioritize financing the real economy of beneficial jobs and production. We know that we must rein in corporate power through stronger antitrust enforcement to break up monopolies, through laws that hold corporations accountable for environmental and social harm, and through restoring the principle that corporations are chartered only to serve a public purpose. None of these ideas are radical. They're common sense measures with historical precedents and broad public support. What often blocks them is the entrenched influence of elites benefiting from the status quo. But that influence can be suppressed when people organize in great numbers behind a moral vision. At the community level, each of us can help build the new economy of an ecological civilization from the ground up. Local food movements, cooperatives, community-owned energy projects, and participatory budgeting in cities. These are ways people are creating the new systems in the shell of the old. Every time a neighborhood starts an urban garden, or a city sets up a public solar utility, a piece of the life-centered society comes to life. Every time workers form a cooperative business or neighbors create a tool-sharing library, the grip of the old story loosens a bit more. These local efforts are the laboratories of systemic transformation. They inspire others. Success stories can spread and scale up through networks of communities learning from each other. Policy changes and grassroots innovation can and must work in tandem. Policy can empower local actions. For example, policies that support community energy co-ops or penalize pollution. And local success can pave the way for broader policies by showing what's possible. The evolution toward an ecological civilization will likely be an interplay of bottom-up and top-down change, guided by a unifying vision of a better world. Underlying all these changes is a shift in values, a spiritual and ethical awakening. Many in my generation had our eyes opened by movements for civil rights, women's rights, peace, and the environment. We learned to see that much of what we assumed to be normal was in fact unjust and destructive. Now, humanity as a whole is being called to open its eyes to our broader relationship with the living earth and with each other. We must come to see that violence against nature is as morally untenable as violence against people, and that allowing gross poverty in the midst of plenty is a profound economic failure. This shift is as much spiritual as political. Indeed, I consider the work before us a deeply spiritual endeavor. It is about coming home to connection, remembering the sacredness of creation and the inherent worth of each member of the Earth community. It is about humility, recognizing that humans are not the masters of the universe, but participants in a miracle much larger than ourselves. And it is about love, not love as a sentiment, but love as an active force for transformation. This love is revolutionary because it excludes no one and nothing from the circle of concern. It urges us to redesign our societies to reflect universal compassion. In closing, I return to the theme of creation's journey, the story of our universe as we now understand it, a grand creative drama. From the Big Bang to the formation of stars and galaxies, from the birth of our Earth to the advent of life and consciousness, it is an ongoing journey beyond our ever greater complexity, beauty, awareness, and possibility. Remarkably, each of us alive today has a role in this narrative. We are stardust become alive, matter that has evolved to sing, dance, reason, and love. As such, we stand at a crossroads between two possible futures. In one future, we continue on the path of separation and likely bring the human chapter of creation's journey to an untimely end. In the other future, we find our rightful place as responsible, loving members of the Earth community in an ecological civilization, helping to guide creation's journey into a future of harmony and new possibilities. The choice could not be more profound. It is, in a real sense, a test of what being human truly means. Are we, as the old story implied, destined to fight and consume until we collapse? Or are we, as the new story suggests, agents of conscious evolution, capable of wisdom and self-restraint, able to align our lives with the well-being of the whole? I believe the latter is our true nature and the actualization of our true potential. Evolution has gifted us with extraordinary minds and the freedom to choose, gifts that come with the responsibility to use them wisely. If we choose well, future generations might look back on this era as the time when humanity finally grew up, when we shifted from our adolescence of recklessness to a mature commitment to stewardship, compassion, and respect for life. They might say this was when we turned from the brink of disaster and began the real work of healing our relationships with Earth and each other. Of course, such a profound shift is not automatic. It requires conscious effort, courageous leadership, and the participation of us all. It will not be easy. Birth never is. We will certainly face resistance from those who profit from the status quo and who seek only to grow their personal wealth and power. There will be setbacks and moments of doubt. But I take heart in remembering that the dream of an earth aligned with justice and life is an ancient dream. It has been whispered by prophets and sung by poets for millennia. It was the dream of Martin Luther King Jr., of Mahatma Gandhi, of Nelson Mandela, each in their own way yearning and working for a world where the dignity of every person is respected and where we live in peace with one another and with creation. Science and spirit, once seen to be at odds, now tell us the same thing. Life is profoundly interconnected. Cooperation and care are keys to life's thriving. We are meant for far more than the selfish scramble that has dominated recent human history. In our hearts, we know it to be true that we find our deepest fulfillment not in what we consume or accumulate for ourselves, but in what we share, in the relationships we nurture, and the good we do for others. The joy of helping a neighbor, the wonder of a forest, the feeling of being part of a community. In these moments, we experience the true richness of life. Being human is not about dominating or transcending our earthly home. It is about coming home. It is about seeing with clear eyes the reality of our interdependence and acting from that awareness. It's about embracing our role as members of the family of Earth rather than as conquerors of it. We are, in the fullest sense, children of Earth. And our maturity as a species will be measured by how we honor our Mother Earth and all our relationships in the community of life. As we stand in this threshold time, let us choose to live into the new story. Let us find our place in creation's journey, not as tyrants or bystanders, but as humble heroes of a chapter still being written. Each of us has a unique contribution to make, a unique gift to offer toward the great turning. The calling of our time is to bring those gifts forward in service of the whole, to join hands with others in common cause, and to allow the ancient dream of a just, compassionate, and sustainable world to guide us. We do not know every step of the path ahead, but the direction is clear. As the Earth Charter reminds us, we stand at a critical moment in Earth's history, a time when humanity must choose its future. If we choose life, if we choose love, community, and reverence, we will not only avoid self-destruction, we will usher in a future, an ecological civilization of immeasurable promise. In that future, being fully human will mean, above all, being a faithful member of the vast community of life and an active co-creator in the continuing journey of creation. That is a future worth working for with all our heart and soul. Let us step forward together with courage and compassion to play our part in this great turning. In doing so, we will discover the deeper meaning of being human, as co-creators, as caretakers, and as companions to all life on this beautiful living earth. We will prosper together in our care for life, or we will perish together in our exploitation of life to make money for the already morbidly rich. The choice is ours.
You were just listening to David Corton on the future of humanity. He spoke in Bainbridge Island, Washington, in late August. David Corton is a visionary intellectual and philosopher. He's the author of many books, including Agenda for a New Economy. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, an independent nonprofit in our 40th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Winona LaDuc, Chris Hedges, and Arundhati Roy. And we have a series of David Corton programs. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, David Corton on the Future of Humanity, and for his book, Agenda for a New Economy, call us 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. To get them, just call us 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
This is Bird Note. It's one of those clear, quiet winter mornings on the bay. The silence is broken by a series of loud, insistent calls. What's the source of this wild refrain? There, 100 yards out where the water deepens, is a small cluster of sea ducks, dressed mostly in white. They're long-tailed ducks, back for the winter from nesting far to the north. Long-tailed ducks are named for the male's plumage. Long, slender tail plumes extend almost a foot behind his body. Long-tailed ducks are far more vocal than most ducks, a feature that has earned them a host of charming nicknames. The name that probably comes closest to capturing the sound of the male's call is from the Cree language, Hahaway. This winter, along either coast or on the Great Lakes, listen for long-tailed ducks. By listening, you'll have an advantage, because they can be hard to spot. When they're feeding, long-tailed ducks spend a lot of time underwater, and they can dive as deep as 200 feet. Even so, you can get a good look at a long-tailed duck on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein. This episode is dedicated to Dan Moore for his many years of board service and generous support of Bird Note.
Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases from any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.